Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. That's where you'll find more than 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the former retirement capital of the New World and now new media center of the known universe, St. Petersburg, Florida. Post-war baby boom is becoming something else, more than half a century later. But is that something else a bust? In his new book, Baby Boomer Bust, and the title ends in a question mark, Roger Keoki says it may be a problem that the average baby boomer nearing retirement only has $68,000 in a 401k. And no, if you're looking at the totality of retirement and not just the first year, that is not much at all. Next week, on April 15, 2010, in case you're hearing this afterwards, I'll even be attending the second day of the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference, which will be held in Clearwater at Ruth Eckerd Hall. It's designed to help us understand how the recession has impacted boomers. I expect to learn what they're spending money on right now, which messages resonate most with them, and what they want from businesses today. And apparently, deeper senior discounts at Denny's is not the correct answer. By the way, the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference is open to the public, and you can register online and get more information at www.floridaboomerlifestyle.com. Joining me today in advance of his appearance as a guest speaker at the conference is Roger Keoki, a principal in the Connecticut-based marketing firm BrandLoft. You can find them, I believe, at brandloft.com, and he's also the author of the book, Baby Boomer Bust, which will be in great bookstores. Well, I believe it is in bookstores now, and you can order it at MrMedia.com. Roger, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you. Tell me, just correct me. Go ahead and correct me. The book is out now, correct?
The book is out now. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and should be in bookstores shortly, if not already.
Great. Well, look, I want to jump right in, and I want to skip right to chapter 12, if you don't mind.
Okay.
we're gonna go about a third of the way into the book.
Two-thirds of the way, I think.
Two-thirds of the way. I knew what I wanted to ask you, but I had the book open to the wrong place. Chapter 12, you actually call chapters 11, 7, and 13. So I got to ask you, is bankruptcy the answer?
Well, it just depends. I mean, a lot of boomers, you could have been a relatively affluent boomer, working in middle-level management for a big company, and because of the recession, got laid off. And if you don't have enough in savings or your 401k, you may quickly get more debt than you have liquid assets, at the very least. So, yes, I know of several boomers who have used bankruptcy as an option, one of the three alternatives available. And it will help you get rid of your debt. It does stay on your record for 10 years, and you can only use it once every 10 years, I believe. And it makes it very difficult to get credit going forward, but for some, it's a lifesaver.
But it's not a retirement strategy.
No, it's not a retirement strategy. It's a way to reduce your debt. And, I had come in contact with several boomers who had declared bankruptcy. And it gives you a fresh start is what it does. And, with boomers, the paradigm for retirement is different than it was for our parents' generation. Our parents' generations, they had their formal career or occupation. They worked till they were in their 60s, and most of them, and then they went down to where you live and to retire. But today, instead of a two-step process, it's really a three-step process. It's your formal career occupation, then your gap years, 65 to about 87, and then the time when you need, you know, care or assisted living or, you know, family members caring for you. So really preparing for those gap years, 65 to 87, is really something that's important. To the extent that bankruptcy, if you're in your 50s and you've been laid off, can, you know, get rid of your debt so you can prepare for these gap years, that's a good thing. Obviously, no one wants to be in that situation, obviously.
Do you remember a movie, it's been about 35 years ago, called Logan's Run?
You know, I did not see that movie.
Well, the basic conceit of the movie was that at 30, you died. You were taken out of your misery because society couldn't handle anyone over 30, and you had outlived your usefulness. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder if they may have been onto something because, you know, approaching 50 as I am, I'm thinking retirement looks pretty damn miserable. I mean, and this is from someone who's actually done some preparation and has saved a bit, but I look around me and I just, it's, you know, maybe we need to be Logan's runned a bit.
Well, a lot of people do. I mean, there's a big fear out there among boomers that they're going to outlive their money. And it's sort of a justifiable fear because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the average 401k is $68,000. And, you know, only about 20% of baby boomers are covered by a defined benefit pension program, which, you know, is basically the traditional pension that many of our parents had.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a challenge, to say the very least. That's why the gap years are so important, because you're going to have to reinvent yourself and find a second career, or maybe extend your first, but in most cases you're going to have to find a second career to work at during your gap years.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, you know, I'm looking back at the subtitle of your book, of course, is How the Generation of Promise Became the Generation of Panic. And I was thinking about Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation, which was the World War II generation. Does that make the baby boomer? And I'm a late end, an end of baby boom baby boomer. Does that make us the greatest disappointing generation? Did we drop the ball?
Perhaps. I mean, if you look at what happened, well, you know, yes and no, I'll say. I don't want to be too hard on us. I'm one of them, too. You know what? We did a lot of great things. We said no to the Vietnam War, and we won, ultimately. We said no to Nixon and Watergate, and we won. We ushered in high technology, the era of high technology, and we won big. But I think what happened in the last 2 years brings into higher relief some of our foibles. You know, we let greed get the best of us. And, you know, that's what happened with this whole subprime mortgage crisis. There are many culprits, certainly the mortgage companies, certainly the government for allowing markets to go unregulated, certainly Wall Street. But people became so obsessed with having more toys that we basically self-destructed, or self-imploded probably is a better word. I don't think destructive is probably too strong.
Is it? It's funny. I can look up and down my street, and I live in a nice neighborhood. It's not, it's not Park Avenue, but I live in a nice neighborhood, and I look up and down my street these days, and people in our age group, baby boomers certainly, who, you know, I've looked up to and admired for years, as they're being foreclosed out of their homes and their homes are going through distress sales, I'm just thinking, you know, do we even know these people? Did society push people to be extremely greedy and avaricious, or was it just the times?
Well, I think if you go back to the 80s, the Reagan years when, you know, the top tax rate went down from 90% to 35%. That sort
rate
of
is good.
Fueled, yeah, and you know, Gordon Gekko, of course, is the iconic figure of that era. Greed is good. We sort of bought that. You know, what's happened is we live in a society today. You know, some people go out there and say that the baby boomers are the wealthiest generation of all time. Well, that's true, but it's not true. It is true if you look at it in aggregate, I suppose. But you have to understand that in our society, 1% of the population controls 42% of the financial wealth, which means there's only 58% left for the other 99. So, you know, so the middle class is basically withering away. So at the high end, the baby boomers are doing very, very well. But unless you're, you know, a Wall Street investment banker or Bill Gates, you might have some issues.
All right. And tell folks a little bit about your background, how you happened to study this and write a book about this. I mean, as I understand it, your background is in branding and marketing.
Advertising, marketing, yes. Well,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, we have a company called Brand Loft up here in Fairfield County, Connecticut. And, you know, we do consult on brands. And a lot of times what we do to really come to to complete our analysis is we do a lot of in-depth interviewing with consumers, with internal stakeholders, whatever, anyone who impacts a given brand. And, you know, last March when the Dow was teetering around 6,500, you know, we looked at it. I finally got the courage up to look at my 401k, which, you know, took, you know, a dose of courage. And, you know, and it was, you know, and my partners and I, you know, my partners did the same, and we were sort of flabbergasted by, like, how far down it had gone. I go, could this really have happened to us? So we thought it would be interesting to use our expertise at interviewing and analysis to see what happened to baby boomers. So we started with an online survey of 150 baby boomers and interpreted that. Then we did 9 individual profiles of 9 individual baby boomers across the socioeconomic spectrum, and that's sort of the heart of the book, sort of like a Studs Terkel view of the meltdown. And then we tried to come up with some prescriptive advice at the end, so to speak.
And you used actual people throughout here, too, which I mean, I like it. You know, you make it very human that way, but are people, I seem to remember 15, 20 years ago, some writer made a point that the way things were going in society, people were more likely to tell you everything about their sex lives than about their finances, but it seems like you got people to open up about their finances.
Well,
the situation.
I did promise them in return for their candor that I would change their names, but not the story, so I did get them to. And we talked to, I mean, in many ways, you know, the people we talked to were just ordinary people, but each of them had an extraordinary story, and I thought that was, you know, fun. I thought it was revealing, not fun necessarily, but,
right.
You know, we talked to a fellow named Dick Shaughnessy who worked at Citigroup, mid-level IT manager. The name of the chapter is actually Empty Bucket because he was, I think, about 55. He was looking at his 401k and his numbers, and he was ready to retire and in about a couple of years. And he made a list of all the things he'd like to do, basically sporting events, go to a Super Bowl, go to a Final Four, go to a Kentucky Derby. And he was close, as I said. And all of a sudden, Citigroup gets caught up in this whole subprime mess. The stock goes from $50 a share to $2 a share. Now, mind you, half of his 401k was in Citigroup stock, so that's a 95% fall. And then the other half was in a market basket, so that was about a 40% fall. And on top of that, to add insult to injury, he got laid off. So he's going to have to you know, he was right near the precipice of being able to retire, but he's going to have to work a lot longer than he ever thought, and his, you know, his bucket list is going to have to wait.
In doing the book, did you meet anybody who inspired you with the way that they've carried themselves and handled themselves? Anybody that you learned from or were able to, you know, present as a lesson to people?
Yeah, there was a guy named John Perotti. He was making close to $1 million a year on Wall Street as a trader. had his own trading firm, and for lots of different reasons it broke up, and, you know, that he couldn't really find other employment, and today he's working as a bartender. You know, right around here in Fairfield County. The interesting thing about him is a lot, and I've talked to a psychotherapist about this who actually practices with an affluent practice, a lot of people who were sort of the high and mighty, making a lot of money, they can't adjust when they lose their fortune or their net or their wealth. You know, they keep on doing the same things by rote, whereas John was able to, he never let hard times or hard luck get in the way of hard work. And he mm-hmm. just does what he has to do to make things happen. He has to support, he's separated, but he has to support a wife and a child. He does what he has to do. And I think he's inspirational. What we find, though, is that people in the middle and the lower end of the economic spectrum are much more resilient than the ones at the high end.
Well, they have less to lose.
True. I mean, they're used to living. Yeah, true. They're used to living hand to mouth, so it becomes not a big deal to them when things get even tougher. But when this Dr. Michael Formica told me about a woman who was a very successful Wall Street person. I think she lost about $10 million. That was her whole fortune in the meltdown. And she's still doing everything. She still goes to the club, still goes out to lunch, still sends her kids to the same schools. Sooner or later, everything's going to crack. But,
right.
You know, but that's the ingrained attitude of, you know, people at the higher end of the spectrum.
Did you change anything about the way that you live your life or prepare for, you know, retirement or any of that as a result of doing the research on the book?
I definitely cut back on spending. You know, it's interesting that fella John Perotti, the Wall Street trader turned bartender, he said something really, really insightful. He said by the time you realize you can't maintain your past lifestyle, you're already too deep underwater. And that's because a lot of people, we have our high earning years, the boomers, probably in our 40s and early 50s, and sooner or later those earning years stop, and it's really hard to adjust. And you don't adjust at first, and you dig into savings or whatever, or ring up credit card debt. I've tried, it's been tough, but I've been trying to do that. I mean, I used to work as an executive on Madison Avenue before I had my own agency, but, I'm trying to reinvent myself as an entrepreneur for my gap years.
And as you look at, what's happened to the baby boomers and let's put aside, if we can, let's put aside the whole last 2 years and what happened. But as they were going along and taking care of themselves and doing what they're doing, do the boomers bear some responsibility for their own predicament, whether it was because of getting caught up in real estate the last 2 years or, you know, mortgaging themselves to Hawk, whatever it is, are they responsible, or should the government just help them out because there's so many of them and it's such a disaster?
Oh, sure, we're responsible. I mean, I mean, who are the people pulling the strings in the subprime mortgage crisis? Probably all boomers.
Yeah.
Maybe except Angelo Mozilla, who's a lot older, the guy who used to run Countrywide. Mm-hmm. But, a lot of these wounds are self-inflicted. We let greed catch up with ourselves. Interestingly, we've been, as I said earlier, we've been a very skewed toward the high-end society for the last 30 years or so, or for the last, definitely the last 20. And, the average CEO used to make 40 times the average worker in his company, his or her company, in the 60s. Now they make 400 times. The 60th percentile in terms of earning today versus the 60s makes only 3% more in real dollars. Yeah, our society has gotten out of whack. One of the biggest scams of all times, I think, is the 401k. Basically, companies substituted the traditional, the 401k for the traditional pension. Okay, mm-hmm. And the average 401k, as you said, before the meltdown was $68,000. You can't live on that. I have a very good friend who's a teacher in New Jersey. He makes in the middle income area. And, I asked him about his pension once, and the present value of his pension when he retires will be about $500,000. So the 401ks, I think, were a little bit of a scam. It got these pension liabilities off the books of big companies, but it replaced it with an alternative that I don't think was the most viable in terms of being able to fund a retirement, which puts more pressure on Social Security.
Well, the 401k situation is interesting to me because prior to that, companies had pensions. Many companies had pensions. Certainly government employees had pensions. School employees had pensions. A lot of companies had pensions. The 401k created a situation where it became more about personal responsibility. Are you going to be responsible enough for your own retirement without Big Brother doing it for you? We'll give you $300 a month as a pension, but hey, if you can be responsible and put aside money every week from your paycheck starting when you're in your 20s until you're 65, hey, you could retire with a lot. But yeah, you're probably in your 20s and think, well, that doesn't really matter to me much now. I'll take care of it later. And we're not going to give you a pension anymore. And oh, what, you're 45, 50 years old and you haven't been putting any money away? Well, that was a decision you made. You're responsible. Screw you.
Well, I think that's true to a certain extent. But I think there's a lot of factors at play here. A lot of people do put away their 5% or whatever they're allowed to put away, whether or not the company matches. But think about the economic environment we've lived in for the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. Interest rates have been traditionally very low. There's been some spikes, but ever since the 14% prime during the Carter-Reagan years, interest rates have been pretty low, particularly in the 90s and this decade. So if I'm putting away money in a 401k, am I going to put it in money market funds and get 2%? Just do the math. It's not gonna do anything for you. So basically, the investment community basically sold us on what's called the rule of 72, which is, okay, every time your cumulative annual increase adds up to 72%, that doubles your money. Okay, so 6% a year, every 12 years, my money doubles. Okay, that's a valid hypothesis. And it's a way to plan. So you have to put your money in a market basket, and hopefully the Dow will go up. Market basket that mirrors the Dow, and hopefully the Dow will go up 6% a year. Works fine until the Dow goes from 14,000 to 6,500, over 50% decline, and now it has to increase by 100% just to get back to where you were.
Yeah.
And really, no one in their right mind in the mid '90s, during when Greenspan was keeping interest rates, so would not. Why would you put your money in money market funds and make 1% a year? It's just not going to grow. So it was good for Wall Street because it sort of forced people to invest. But even I did the math. Even if you earned $80,000 a year over the average of a 30-year career, and put away 5% a year consistently, it would still be less than the $500,000 that my teacher friend has in his pension program. Mm. So it's sort of a little bit of a scam, unless your company is very generous and does a lot of generous matching. And the fact of the matter is, people don't work like. Unlike our parents' generations, people don't work in the same company for 30 years. So there's going to be times between jobs when you're going to have, unless you have other savings, you're going to have to pull from your 401k to live. And matter of fact, there's a story about a mid-level marketing exec, actually a senior-level marketing exec, whose gone just through that, and he's basically living hand to mouth now, even though he's a white collar executive at a pretty big company.
Well, you know, we've got a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about two things. One is, anything particular that we haven't touched on that you're going to discuss in your talk at the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference?
Well, I think, you know, my survival guide for boomers nearing retirement, I think there's four steps.
Okay.
Number one, readjust your spending now. It's difficult. You can't do it overnight because it's just, you know, as I said, it's very difficult to go from, you know, living on, you know, maybe an income at around $200,000 to an income of around $60,000 or maybe nothing if you're between jobs. But you have to make that adjustment. Number two, you have to prepare for the gap years, 65 to 87. You're going to have to work to a certain extent, probably not at the job that you've worked at for earlier in your life, but you're going to have to figure something out, and which is step number three, reinvent yourself. You know, think about, actually there's a very good story here that was told to me by a psychotherapist I interviewed. He had a client who was a sheet metal worker, and he was in his mid-50s, and his knees gave out, and he just couldn't do it anymore. So he had to think of a job he could do well into his 70s, maybe even 80s. The guy loved to read, so he went back to school and became a librarian. As simple as that, he transformed himself, and now he has a job which he can make decent money at and do well into his 70s. So here's a guy who reinvented himself, and he should be, you know, a model for everyone else. And last but not least, as well as reinventing yourself, you need to put together. You need to find an alternative living situation or consider alternative living situations. And there's lots of creative living situations out there. If you want to stay in your house, but you're not sure if you could take care of yourself or do everything, there's a thing called a naturally occurring retirement community where, you know, once a neighborhood gets over, you know, a preponderance of people over 60 years of age, they create an association, and they pay maybe a few hundred dollars a month, and they have a staff to help them with their with lots of things, you know, grocery shopping, getting to the doctors, whatnot, getting discounts from the local stores. That is something that has been viable. There's a place called Beacon Hill Village in the Boston area where they do this. There's, obviously the obvious thing is multi-generational households, maybe Back to the Future. We're the first generation where grandparents didn't live in the same house with their grandchildren. So that's something to be considered, and I think it's happening as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, there's things like community housing, which is really, really interesting. It's basically 20 couples or so get together, and they develop their own community, which is usually it's either a renovation or a new building. They find a site, and they build smaller living units and big common areas, so they could all sort of live together and take care of themselves as they get older up until the point when they need, you know, assisted living-type facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of interesting living options. Another thing is, moving to Mexico or Costa Rica, a lot of people are doing that. I think there's particularly an opportunity for community housing developments there where you can basically live on your Social Security pretty comfortably.
Right.
So,
go
ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, Roger. I've got to interrupt because we're actually just about out of time.
Okay.
And I want to tell everybody that they can find your book, Baby Boomer Bust, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com. I suspect it's available at your website, brandloft.com?
Yes. Actually, babyboomerbus.net.
Ah, there we go. I'm sorry, and I'll make a note of that. And can people find you on Facebook or on Twitter?
I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter, Roger Kiyoki, C-H-I-O-C-C-H-I. And there's a book, there's actually a group on Facebook, Baby Boomer Bust, so I encourage your listeners to join.
Terrific. Well, Roger, I'm sorry that we ran out of time, but thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
A lot of good information.
You take care.
Well, maybe we'll see you later this week. Thanks.
Hopefully. Take care.
All right. And, folks, for more original interviews on business topics, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media Radio listeners. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia for your free audiobook. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.